Scrooge and the Phantom came into the presence of this man, just as a woman with a heavy bundle slunk into the shop. But she had scarcely entered when another woman, similarly laden, came in too, and she was closely followed by a man in faded black, who was no less startled by the sight of them than they had been upon the recognition of each other. After a short period of blank astonishment, in which the old man with the pipe had joined them, they all three burst into a laugh.
"Let the charwoman alone be the first," cried she who had entered first. "Let the laundress alone to be the second, and let the undertaker's man alone to be the third. Look here, old Joe, here's a chance. If we haven't all three met here without meaning it."
"You couldn't have met in a better place," said old Joe, removing the pipe from his mouth. "Come into the parlor."
Appeared to be a horseman of large dimensions and mounted on a black horse of powerful frame. He made no offer of molestation or sociability, but kept aloof on one side of the road, jogging along on the blind side of old Gunpowder, who had now got over his fright and waywardness. Ichabod, who had no relish for this strange midnight companion, and bethought himself of the adventure of Brom Bones with the galloping Hessian, now quickened his steed in hopes of leaving him behind.
In the 1930s, John Maynard Keynes, one of the world's most famous economists, compared America's financial markets to a casino. Now, nearly 100 years later, financial market critics still promote that same theme. Politicians and pundits, including Tucker Carlson, Sohrab Ahmari, and Senators Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, and Bernie Sanders, Independent of Vermont, regularly attack the financial industry as harmful and wasteful. Do they have a case? Are financial markets ruinous dens of speculation that add little to the nation's economy? Popular movies like The Wolf of Wall Street and The Big Short certainly make it seem so.
Rolled across the gay, flower-decked lawns in search of Toad, whom they presently happened upon resting in a wicker garden chair, with a preoccupied expression of face and a large map spread out on his knees.
"Hooray!" he cried, jumping up on seeing them. "This is splendid!" He shook the paws of both of them warmly, never waiting for an introduction to the mole. "How kind of you!" he went on, dancing around them. "I was just going to send a boat down the river for you, Ratty, with strict orders that you were to be fetched up here at once, whatever you were doing. I want you badly, both of you. Now, what will you take? Come inside and have something. You don't know how lucky it is you're turning up just now."
"Let's sit quietly a bit today, Toady,"
said the Rat, throwing himself into an easy chair, while the Mole took another by the side of him and made some civil remark about Toad's delightful residence.
"Finest house on the whole river," cried Toad boisterously. "Or anywhere else, for that matter," he could not help adding.
The central problem of any economy is that it has scarce resources with alternative uses. If a piece of land, a raw material, a machine, or a person's labor is used for one purpose, it cannot be used for another. We have to decide how to best use our resources. How do we decide what goods and services to produce? Just as importantly, how do we decide what not to produce?